Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes, thank you. It's kind of like, oh, hello, yes. Prior shows, yes. People reminding me about prior shows. They're saying that I should say that there's lots of them. And yes, there are lots of them. We've been doing it a long time. So now let's get started on this one so we can make one more. Yay! This one is going to be talking about self-doubt. Yes, we're going to be talking about it. Everybody has that occasionally, where they're not sure that this is what they can do, where they're not sure if this is something that's a good idea. Yeah. Where they're not sure, well, when they're just not sure about something. Mm-hmm. And in order to be effective, of course, we need to do something about that because we, as leader, are going to need to put aside our self-doubts. So we're going to ask the kind of a question that we always ask. You guys are already answering it. Hello. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to everyone. We usually ask a general question, then we take the show where it goes. It is not particularly scripted. In fact, it's not scripted at all. So what kinds of self-doubt do we as leaders have within our context? Within our context of a mediation, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, what kind of self-doubt are we dealing with? Let's do us first, leader, and then we're going to do our participants and the media and outsiders and like that, because they have self-doubt that we have to deal with because it impacts how they're responding in the team, how they are responding during the negotiation. And their self-doubt has an impact on that. So it's going to affect us also in addition to our own self-doubt. So what kind of self-doubt do we have? Yes, I think the first one that we're going to talk about is the idea that maybe we're not quite up to this. We're not capable to lead. We're not capable of doing this. We don't have enough experience, for heaven's sakes. And yes, the second one, because a lot of you have been here before, and I'm so proud that you're still here. Thank you. A lot of people are talking about the self-doubt, whether or not only can we lead and have the experience to do so, but whether we could really enforce the civility rules. And the civility rules, at their very basic, are the only rules Recipe for Peace Now has. And at their very basic, they say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. Right? Yeah. And we'll talk about that in greater detail. But we might think, well, maybe I can't get this to go. I can't get it to be civil. Can't get it to be respectful. Self-doubt that we have insufficient knowledge. We don't really know what the details are on this. And whether or not the proposition that's been made is a good idea. It's hard to know. I deal with technology a lot. I'm not certain if that's true or not, or if it's the only way or a good way and like that. So I have to, well, we'll talk about what we do. And I'm going to lump everything else, because it really kind of fits, into the category of I don't understand what's going on. I'm the leader. I'm supposed to know what's going on. I don't understand what's going on. It don't look right to me, but I'm not sure why. So we'll put everything else into that category, because it kind of goes. It's kind of the, I don't, my goodness, really? I don't think so type category. Let's talk about the self-doubt none of our participants, and maybe the media, and maybe outsiders, right? Yeah. Our participants often have a little self-doubt that they're not sure if they're in the right group for a variety of reasons, right? Yeah. And people are talking about not the right level of employment, not the person that should be here, and like that. A lot of that has to also do with peers, your peer pressure. Yes. Mm-hmm. And going with in the same self-doubt that says, I'm not sure this group is for me, says, I don't know if I'm the right person for this. I don't think I'm the right person to do this, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about self-doubt that's caused by the media or is impacted by the media? Because one of the things that we need to really focus on is the fact that the media makes public opinion, right? Yeah, the media makes public opinion. Now, at the moment, for example, well, we'll talk about the example in a minute. Mm-hmm. Oh, you want to talk about it now? You got all excited. Well, I was going to say for the moment in the world, of course, we've got the coronavirus. And the media in the United States is kind of fanning hysteria. There are very few cases, and the government is indeed aware of it and making a fuss and closing borders and stuff like that. But the media is really running public opinion. And even though there are very few cases, although quite frankly, I had the flu that's going around, man, it's really nasty, so maybe we all should wear masks just for that, just for the regular flu, because I was feeling kind of not so good for 2 weeks, and usually I'm pretty good about taking stuff for it, and you know what I mean, and kind of get rid of it. So perhaps there was something nasty going around. But the coronavirus is not very many people in a very big country. Actually, a run on a shortage. There's actually a run on surgical type masks. People are wearing them on the street, and kind of staples like water and stuff like that in the United States. Now, maybe in China, where they've gotten quite a few cases, especially in the rural areas near Wuhan. Well, that's the epicenter. But the media is inflaming that. And the market's doing poorly. You know what I mean? It all makes a kind of a weird progression. So the media is very important and should never be discounted. We're going to talk about how to deal with them. Mm-hmm. This is a very good point that a lot of you are making. And I think this is actually true, that when you deal with participants and the media and outsiders, you deal with their self-doubt, you kind of need to define their position for them, right? You kind of present the issues and a solution and help them to understand that they are part of the solution and we're fine. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's a media thing, really, more than anything else. And it's you have to tell them, we're fine. We've got this. This is what you need to know to regain your confidence. And then they go, oh, okay. Pardon me. Oh, I still got the cough. So let's go do this. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about leaders first. Let's talk about us first because, well, we're the most interesting. No, because we need to know about us the most. And the first one talked about was self-doubt that I'm incapable to lead, right? Yeah, I can't. Don't know how. I can't do this. I'm not the leader of this group. I don't know. And so that's self-doubt. Ah, this is a good point that I wasn't even going to make. Muhammad and others are saying that you can't have self-doubt because you have been chosen for a reason. Somebody chose you to be the leader. You didn't just wake up one day and yell, I'm going to lead this. No, somebody chose you. They said, oh, well, Sue can really handle this. Let's have her do it, right? Yeah. By the way, we call that person, organization, whatever it is that chose you to be the leader, had the smarts to do so, right? The one that chose you to be the leader is we refer to as the employer. It is a generic term on this show. It does not necessarily indicate an employment relationship. It's just a generic for anybody who had the brains to bring us in. Because, well, they're smart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we certainly are capable. But sometimes a little bit of self-doubt creeps in. Mm-hmm. So what should we do about it? Yes. How about having a mentor? Somebody you can call to kind of assist you and say, well, if I was doing it, this is how I would do it. Or, well, no, you've got this. That's exactly what I think. And somebody who's a mentor. Yes, mentors are fabulous. Yes, that's what we're going to need. We're going to need a mentor. Mm-hmm. And a mentor doesn't even, it depends if your anxiety is technical. And then we're going to talk about that later in the show. We're going to use experts. But a mentor can be your mom. You know, people think about mentors as being somebody in the same business and like that. Not for self-doubt. Your mentor can be a friend, your mother, somebody who's not in the business but understands you and understands that you are absolutely the one for this and you have got this, girl or boy. Sorry. You've got this. You can handle it. You're doing it. Yeah. Just keep plugging away. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a mentor. Because sometimes mentors are business mentors, right? Sometimes it's a funny little thing. I see this in the United States. I don't know if this is true in other countries or not. Probably it is for the multinationals. Because they all kind of do the same program. In the United States, in especially in big organizations, right, sometimes they have kind of a program where they assign mentors to the new people. Not sight unseen. I mean, just this is yours because they came up on the list next, and you came up on the list next. Now, you could luck out, and this could be fabulous. Or it could not be so much, right? And sometimes the mentors actually are forced, and the mentee, that would be the person who's being mentored, are actually forced to, like, write little reports and send them in about the mentoring process and how it's going. Yeah, this might be a good mentoring, but might not be, and you might need somebody else who is a little more personal to you than an impersonally assigned, you're next up on the list type mentor. Yeah, I've seen groups assigned like that too. And it's really hit or miss. Sometimes, just by the luck of the draw, it's wonderful. More times than not, I think, it's at least burdensome. And at worst, really a bad idea, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. So incapable to lead? Well, you might like somebody to talk to. Okay, talk to your psychiatrist. That's a good point. Talk to a professional who understands how to deal with life, or your life coach, or whoever it is you like to talk to. Mm-hmm. You might think you're incapable to lead because you've no experience. How about gaining some experience beforehand? Yes, a lot of you are saying that you feel kind of lost when you get to leadership position because you really haven't done it very much and you've never seen it very much. Well, let's go and look. Let's go volunteer. Let's become an intern. Let's join and help out with some sort of a group with somebody leading who is someone we'd like to emulate. Yeah, I get people that join my groups like that. And I don't mind because I think that it makes us all stronger. And I really think that it's important for people to go out in the world and do mediation, negotiation, lead us to civil discourse. And if nobody teaches you, how are you going to know? So they come and they kind of watch and they ask questions and that's fine, but I do require that they also be an active, good faith member of the group and not just be a voyeur, yeah, not just be watching. to really actually do something that helps us. Yeah. And I don't think that's an unreasonable request. I want you to really have benefit to all around, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can gain experience ahead of time by going and doing something. It also helps your reputation. Because there you are in a group and you're doing something good and you're good at it and you're diligent and you're giving it your best effort and people do notice. And they go, wow, I would like to work with this person again because they were really on top of it, right? Yeah. So it's not just to gain experience. It's not just to sneak over and watch somebody else do it. It's to help that person do it and watch how well it's being done so that you can learn stuff, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually like to analyze different leadership styles. Now, by now, I kind of have one. But especially when I was newer, I actually liked to see how other people did things, right? Yeah. How are you going to know what kind of styles there are if you don't ever see them, right? And sometimes, kind of in the middle of things, you perhaps get a different department or a different country or a different something or other, and you have to understand that to accommodate them, you might have to kind of modify your leadership style slightly. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just means that you're flexible and you're really, really good at it. Mm-hmm. Took a sip of water. Let's put that down so I don't throw it over. Ha, what an idea. It's kind of behind me. I don't know what happened to my table. But I think somebody else used my desk. It's kind of like, things are out of place. So you want to analyze different styles. I think it's oftentimes interesting, especially when you're new, but I sometimes like to do this too. I like to know how come things didn't go well, right? In fact, if I have I see it a lot. I must confess that I see the ones that kind of didn't go well and kind of the groups that kind of failed and the leaders that didn't quite make it. And I see them because if I have a specialty, and you do kind of get a specialty over the years, if I have one, it is to come after a group has failed, but they must reach consensus, they must reach a good decision, and help them through to success, right? Yeah. And help them to understand, well, what exactly went wrong and how come, and we're going to be just fine, right? Yeah, and help them through it. So a lot of times I see failed leadership styles, and I do think it's interesting to try to figure out how come that happened. Because usually they're perfectly sensible people as far as that goes. It's just that, well, things kind of didn't work out. And how come they kind of didn't work out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So failure is quite instructive. Mm-hmm. And also I like to know it because I'm about to turn it around and make it into a success, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next one. You have self-doubt because you don't feel you're incapable of enforcing the civility rules, right? Mm-hmm. The civility rules, as we explained, basically say we will not be rude to one another. You fill in the blanks in more detail as you get there. Mm-hmm. I announce the civility rules. I think you should too. Even if I've got a group that I am relatively certain is going to be just fine and not breach the civility rules in some horrible way and I don't know, get into a fist fight. And usually I don't see groups that are really bad off. Well, that's not true. I do. I see lots. But not in a fist fight type way. They're business people. But they've already failed, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. And you should announce immediately and enforce, you should announce it when you get there, right? And enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Announce the civility rules in as much detail as you need to, and then enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. If you let it go, and you go, well, that wasn't a big breach, and I'm tired, and it's late, and it'll get worse. and then you'll have trouble getting it back, right? So we want to enforce the civility rules immediately. You're feeling like you don't quite, it's going to be hard to enforce them, right? Well, we're going to need some employer backing, even if you're experienced at this, because there's always one who tests the limits, right? Mm-hmm. There's always one who asks the question, either outright, which I have heard, or implied. The question is, if I go uncivil and I'm a bully to someone, what you gonna do about it? What you gonna do about it? Because really the civility rules are just words. So now we have to figure out that we've got some power behind the words. Got to come from the employer, right? Remember, employer is a generic term on this show. I get it in writing. What the penalty will be for violating the civility rules, for being a bully, for being obnoxious, for, I don't know, people do incredible things. What will the penalty be? What's going to happen? What you going to do about it? And it needs to be something substantial, something that makes a difference, and not $10. In the United States, $10 American dollars is nothing. People pay in advance to be rude. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, it's laughable. So you want to get the employer to help you enforce the civility rules by making there a penalty for violation, a serious penalty. How about if you can't participate well in this group, you're out. And it's a group that people want to be in. Right? Yeah. So it wasn't a deliberate act. Sometimes you do need to pull someone aside, at least first offense, and explain no, right? This seems like an incredible statement, but there are people in business, and you've seen them, who really lack civility on a personal basis, and everything they say, because I deal with a lot of lawyers, everything they say that comes out of their mouth seems rude. You ever seen anybody like that? If not, if you took it down on paper, it isn't rude, but it's the tone. Mm-hmm. It's the attitude. Yes. Sometimes you have to peek people aside and explain to them they're going to have to lose the attitude. Hey, that's why we have the potluck, right? So that we can take someone aside and explain to them, nah, not here, not now. Do it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And the employer must truly back you up. How about in a group? I see a lot of groups where everybody's the same level of employment because there's some sort of supervisors or something and they need to enforce. How about if you can't act in a civil manner in this group and you keep doing that, you will no longer be here because you'll be demoted. You'll no longer be the level to play. Mm-hmm. Yes. A monetary fine is workable too. It has to come out of your paycheck and be not a teeny amount, right? Yeah. Also, I think enforcement should be public. Public being in the group, the other participants know about it and why. Because it's a deterrent, because there's others in the group that would like to be uncivil, but they are deterred by the fact that there are penalties, and when they see that the penalties are enforced, it will deter them even more. Yes. So it's a deterrent process, too. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about insufficient knowledge. Mm-hmm. I, as a leader, don't feel that I know enough to do this. Insufficient knowledge. What's the cool thing about knowledge? Yes, Lee and others are saying it. The cool thing about knowledge is that you can fix that. You can learn. You can research. Remember, if you're doing research, but mostly if you've got a subcommittee, like a team, if you had to divide up in teams and they're reporting to the whole, remember to warn everybody that the internet is fabulous, because I remember when there was none. The internet is fabulous, but it will validate anything you say if you look hard enough. There's somebody else who's validated that. That's nice, except for the fact that you need to look at all sides and not stop when somebody else is doing it too. No, we're going to look at all sides and find out whether or not their team has a point, right, about our team. And maybe we have a point about theirs. Yeah. It's very, very strange. There we go. Yes. It's kind of like, oh, the internet will validate anything. But we want to validate for sure in facts. Mm-hmm. So insufficient knowledge. We're going to look stuff up. We're going to get a team event. What if we still don't have insufficient knowledge and we're still not sure? Because you can look up stuff on the internet, but it's not exactly the same circumstances as you've got, because life is never exactly the same circumstances. How about calling in some experts, right? They don't have to physically sit there. Skype exists, or whatever kind of service they like to use. Let's get some experts, so that we can really find out what people who have done it before think. Now I've given it away because people are asking, who are the experts, right? And the answer is, I like someone who has done it before, either successfully or maybe unsuccessfully, and they can tell us what went well or what went wrong or what they argued about and what happened. They can give us the inside scoop, right? I think it's terribly interesting to call in and to talk to people. Or, well, talk being a big word nowadays, you can even email up and back, but be careful because everything that's in writing stays forever and ever and ever. We're going to talk about banning all kinds of devices when we're doing a negotiation, right? Remember, emails and texts are also in writing, and they can be misquoted and they can be found, even if you delete them. Somewhere along the line, they're floating somewhere. And of course, you should delete anything. Well, depending on the circumstances, I suppose, because it does create a record. I like to delete. I probably delete more than I should because I like to keep the privacy of my clients and also sometimes of the experts. I oftentimes like to have someone who has failed because they have a real opinion about what happened. Maybe circumstances have changed. That happens sometimes. And also, they are probably still interested in making it successful. It's just that when their group tried it, it didn't work, right? Yeah. And sometimes circumstances do change. Sometimes you're a little early to the game. And people work very diligently, even after they haven't made it, to make something so. People are asking for an example. Hang on a second. I got to take another sip of water. Yeah, my voice. People are saying my voice sounds thick today. Isn't that funny? It's a respiratory infection. Jeez. Lasts forever. There we go. That ought to help. Me. Yeah. So, that's a good point, too. I like to have somebody who's really done it. I like someone in the field to be an expert. Employers and the media like to see credentials because it makes them happy. And then they can go up the flagpole to their employer, their superior, their board, whoever, and say, look, this expert said this, that's why I reported it that way, the way that we wanted it reported, right? Remember, media makes public opinion. And so they really like credentials. I like credentials. Credentials are very nice. I have a lot of them, personally speaking. But what you really want to know is exactly their opinion on exactly what to do, which means also, as Lee and others are pointing out, sometimes you like to have competing experts if it's not an actual foregone conclusion, right? Competing experts. I always have competing experts. I like to know all sides so that I don't get surprised, right? Yeah. That's the whole thing of it, not to get surprised. The next was what's going on, which is a good question. In order, because you're sitting there and you're thinking, ah, jeez, I don't know what's going on. Something's happening, but I'm not sure what it is. And I'm the leader. That's bad, right? Right. Oh, good point. Good point about the civility rules. Before we go on to what's going on, you must always be a model of civility, Lee and others are telling me. And if you blow it, because sometimes things get on your nerves, and it's been a long day, and you lose your civility for a moment, you must apologize, right? You must acknowledge it. You must pay whatever fine it is, if there's a fine, if there's some sort of a monetary judgment, right? Mm-hmm. And it is important that everyone understand that it's a one-off. It just happened, but we're going to go on from here, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Empathy, which is understanding, not ordinarily agreement, right? Empathy. It tells me why you're doing something. When we have empathy, when we want to develop empathy, we're going to ask the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Who told you that? What exactly did they say? Where did you hear it? When was this told to you? And why did you have that reaction, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you might not say it out loud like that. But what you're doing is you're really asking these questions to get down to the bottom of what's going on. How come you've got this kind of reaction to it, right? Yes. And sometimes what you find out, and this goes to the experience part, I think. Hang on. Sorry. What you find out is that there's some hidden agendas that are now hopefully not hidden because we've developed some empathy and we've asked the 5W questions and we're really thinking about our group and about the outside and media and like that. Media also has agendas. And they have either a personal or an institutional agenda, which means that you are working against a very, very dearly held preconception. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, you got to get rid of the agenda and have everybody work together. Mm-hmm. And you need to really understand what the agenda is. Sometimes the employer has an agenda, and they didn't bother to tell you. But you can see that it is. And I just had a case where there were lots of people involved, and there were lots of kind of mini personal agendas that were tacked onto the corporate one. It was very strange. But it does make a commitment to understanding what your agenda is and what it is you really need. Right? Right. And how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to participants, media, and outsiders. Sometimes there's self-doubt with our participants whether or not they're in the right group, right? Yeah. Whether or not they've chosen well. It's kind of funny. You ever see one of those boards where people sign up for a seminar? They've paid and everything, but they sign up for a seminar, and they want, there's lots of different choices, course choices within it, and they're kind of posted. And people run over and they sign up, and there's some that get signed up lots and some that don't have any. It's not really that the person that doesn't have any sign-ups is no good, right? But it's herd mentality. It's confidence that someone else knows what they're doing and they chose that one, so I'm going to choose that one too. It might also be the reputation of the leader, the teacher of it. All right, mind cell up, and then people make a little arrow, and they kind of fill in the name, even though there's not more lines for a little while, and then the paper runs out, and it's ugly. But it has to do with your leadership style, but the leadership style of the leader, but also of the reputation of the leader. Mm-hmm. And also, participants don't want to be in a group where they're uncomfortable. That leads to self-doubt, right? I'm uncomfortable. It's not a respectful, convivial atmosphere, right? Yeah. I don't like this, right? Mm-hmm. And the leader, have the responsibility for making it a non-toxic atmosphere. Now, it's possible that we may have to divide into smaller groups because some people will not work well with each other. But we have to sort that out after we get together. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, and even we are susceptible to this, a lot of times people have had a prior experience with negotiation or mediation, and it wasn't all that good. And they're kind of preparing themselves for a comparison. Oh, this isn't going to be any good. They've psyched themselves out to a negative self-fulfilling prophecy is what they've done. No, 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 no. That's why we have empathy. That's why we ask the questions. Because we want to be sure that you haven't gotten a negative self-fulfilling prophecy. Right? Yeah. Something bad is going to happen to me. Well, define something bad. Well, just something bad is going to happen to me. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Maybe, but maybe not. And not just because you said so is the key to it. Mm-hmm. And not being in the right group, the self-doubt, leads to self-doubt of I'm not the right person for this group. This group is too good for me, too sophisticated, too not my exact peers, right? Yeah, no. It has to do with the team and the group dynamic. And that is something that the leader, to a great deal, controls, right? Yeah. It's the group dynamic, the team dynamic, the working together. Because you can, in between times, research what experts say and like that and talk to the other people in the group. You're not sitting in a vacuum. And together, we become the right people in the right group. It's amazing. We really do. Mm-hmm. So we become the right people in the right group. Mm-hmm. Because we all try to choose something where we'll thrive, and we know we will. And it's like, oh, this is for me. Mm-hmm. You must also, as leader and as participant, give the group your best efforts. Your best efforts. So that everyone can be proud of their production and not just be the lazy one in the middle. No, sincere best efforts will be required. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the media for a second. We've kind of touched on it, but we're not quite settled with what it really is. Mm-hmm. Media creates public opinion. That's simple as that. Mm-hmm. Because humans like to follow something. And if it's a big, strong leader, they like to follow the big, strong leader. And if it's public opinion made by the media, they like to follow that. Mm-hmm. And they will be swayed. And they will be kind of jerked up and back. Mm-hmm. Now, that's why we need to have a media spokesperson. Is the spokesperson us as leader? Not necessarily. Sometimes, but not necessarily. The spokesperson should be the best at dealing with the media. And we should agree ahead of time what it is that they're going to represent. What it is that they are going to, what it is that they're going to say about us, really. So that we make a good impression, right? Right. So that we can really shine. And the media can go, oh. Also, you have to realize that the media is people. And people are sensitive. And nowadays, the media is not even what you think of as the media, at least what I think of as the media. It's all kinds of blogs and things like that, right? So you must be well-versed, well-able to not, well, people are calling control the media or sway the media. I suppose, but not in an evil way, in a good way, in a way that says our opinions, our way of doing things is a really good idea. Tell people that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, who should talk to the media and be the media spokesperson? Whoever is best at it is what I'm going to say. Whoever is best at it. Because sometimes the media, like employers, are really interested in credentials. It's a big deal, the credentials, the pieces of paper that show that you're an expert at this. In the real life, it's a little bit more, well, a little bit less strident as a concept. Been in there for a while, yeah. And it's, the spokesperson needs to have credentials that show either experience or actual learning credentials. They like it. The media likes to see paper, likes to see titles. And they need to be, and the main thing is they actually have to be models of civility rule also. And understand that the media is not your enemy. They are to be valued and respected, right? They are not your, even if they are not on your side exactly, well, let's modify that. Let's see how come. Let's get together. We are not enemies with the media. The media is our friend. It's just that we, like many things, we choose our friends, but we also are nice to our friends, so they'll stay our friends. Yeah. And I know, no. I don't mean in any way anything illegal or under the table or anything like that. I mean really just courtesy. And making the reporting as easy as possible by putting out press releases. And the press releases also to the bloggers and things too, not just to regular media. I say press release, you think the New York Times. No, I mean to everybody, right? A press release is a carefully worded paragraph or two that promotes our thinking, that promotes our position, that the news media, the media, can just copy and then go on with their lives. You see how easy that is? You see how really convenient that is? If you are very well prepared and help them with their story, yeah? Hey, wouldn't you like that better than some sort of a messy thing with just everybody talking at once and like that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we're going to talk about with outsiders, and maybe for us too, is that when people are self-doubting, they need guidance on what to think. They need guidance. They're not sure. It doesn't seem like them. You ever had anybody say that? It's not me, right? No. Well, are you a human? Do you, I don't know, breathe air, eat, and like that? It's for you. But it is, they need guidance as to what to think. Not brainwashing, really, but just given to understand what it is that we're doing and why it's a good thing, right? And once they get that guidance, they will indeed be quite useful, and they'll be anxious to help because they'll go, oh, wow. Now, I'm not part of this team, not part of this group, but even in the team and in the group, people need guidance as to what to do, what to think. Mm-hmm. That's how you push the process forward. It's not really telling them exactly what to do, but it's suggesting alternatives, for example. And suggesting how it is that we be able to go forward with this. Suggesting something, well, something kind of practical. would be a good idea, don't you think? Yeah. And so people do need guidance, and they appreciate it. It's, of course, couched in very civil and respectful terms. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yeah. A lot of you are talking about what I'm going to call celebrity endorsement. Not necessarily real high-priced actor celebrity endorsement, but somebody who is respected and you respect their opinion endorses this solution, right? Yeah. Endorses this guidance, endorses this position. And you go, well, if it's good enough for, I don't know, name somebody, it must be good enough for me. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the idea of celebrity endorsement. Celebrity being somebody who's respected in the community, not necessarily like a football player or something, although I have seen that. I don't know how just hiring a celebrity, as in really a celebrity, like, I don't know, an actor or an actress or something, I don't know how much that really sways people's minds, especially in a demographic that's more adult. Because maybe for quite young people who want the same sneakers as some sort of a fancy basketball guy might, because they do a lot of that stuff too. Mm-hmm. The next thing we're going to talk about is comfort zone. Because when you're defining the position for people who have self-doubt, one of the reasons they have that self-doubt is because whatever it is we're trying to do is going beyond their comfort zone. It is. It's making them feel left out, uncomfortable. I don't think I like that. In order to get people to go out of their comfort zone, a comfort zone is the way it's always been done, right? And it's easy to choose that way. I explain this to people because they don't understand how come rational people in big businesses and big organizations can choose to ignore kind of the real world, the modern world, and go for something that the company has been doing for, I don't know, since the founder. And really times have kind of changed. I mean, computers have been invented within that time. But the reason that happens to people is because there's a corporate comfort zone or a personal comfort zone. And it is easier to just do it the way it's always been done than to think something through on your own. It's just easier. Everybody goes, oh, yeah, I understand that. That's the way it's supposed to be. Right? Right. We're going to have to see you need a reason to go past your comfort zone, a good reason, not just a, well, because I said so type reason or because it's the fad. No, but once, because it's hard to be the revolutionary who says, well, this is the way we've always done it, but now I think we should do it a different way. Yeah, see, that causes self-doubt. What if I'm wrong? What if the way it's always been done is the way it's always been done is a good idea? And I am wrong about this. You have to understand that that's a big step. You have to have empathy for that and understanding. And not just, well, of course. No. There's no of course to that. You need a good reason to go beyond your comfort zone. And we need to talk about this in the group, maybe with a mentor, maybe with the leader, maybe in semi-private while we're having, look, I finally saved time because I never quite have time to do the recipes and they linger forever. This time I managed to carve out a few minutes because you guys are going, you shouldn't say you're doing two recipes when you start the show because you never even get to one because we just talk through that time. Yes, we're going to get to the seafood risotto because sometimes you need to pull people aside and say, how are you feeling about this? What's going on? And they can tell you. Yeah, and oftentimes they do because they'd like somebody to know. So it's not really a secret. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do is we're going to have some food and a convivial atmosphere, respectful atmosphere, that allows us to have some time together where we're not really negotiating, not really arguing, not really doing anything that causes us to be less than happy, right? Everybody loves to eat, and they want to know about the dishes and like that. So we're going to have some food in the room. We're going to do this. We're going to take a survey. We're going to ask if anybody has an allergy or food prohibition or something they simply don't eat, right? Because we don't want anyone to have a bad time. And we're going to disseminate that information, of course. It's not personal. It's not private. And also, when people come with their dish, we're going to ask them to come with a list of what's in it so I can run my eye down the list and see if that's something that I can eat. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we should have lots of safe recipes that everybody can eat. But sometimes if nobody's allergic and nobody can't eat it and everybody would like it, we can do an adventure recipe. My adventure recipe might be your comfort recipe, depending where you are in the world. But a seafood risotto might be somewhat unusual, depending on the group, really. But we have it as an adventure recipe because we've checked and nobody's allergic to it or can't eat it. There's religious prohibitions about seafood, too. Yes, I make it very obvious what is in there in addition to the list. I actually take one of the pieces, one or two of the pieces of seafood, and I put it right on the top as a garnish so everybody can see it. So here we go. This is our seafood risotto. And it's something that could be made at the time if you've got kitchen so everybody can watch, or it can be made in advance and kept warm, which is good too. Mm-hmm. Let's have 4 tablespoons of oil. Cooking oil, a nice big onion chopped up. I like a big sweet Vidalia or something like that, or a red onion is nice too. Let's have 4 garlic cloves crushed. I use a lot of garlic. If you think that's too many, don't. A cup of arborio rice, which is risotto. If you don't want to actually mess with risotto, which is takes kind of time consuming, it can't be lumpy or anything, you could do pasta with this also. It would be easier. Of course, it's al dente, and the thing about pasta would be that you would have individual pieces of pasta, like a rigatoni or something, and not big, long strands that are messy and hard to eat, messy to serve and hard to eat, right? So we're going to do the risotto. Let's have a cup of arborio rice, which is risotto. Let's have a quarter of a cup of white wine, maybe even more, depending on how much you think. We're going to have 6 cups of hot fish stock. You can't find fish stock, which is a little unusual. Use vegetable or use chicken. I prefer vegetable with the seafood, but you can use chicken also. Do not use beef. It's too dark. It makes it look ugly. Isn't that funny? But it's true. Let's have a couple pounds, because I'd like to be generous, of mixed kind of seafood. If you have shrimp and things, they go in at the last minute, right? I like to have firm pieces of fish and things like that in there. Not mussels, because you have to steam them separately, and they're kind of a pain. And we want to do this as simply as possible. Let's have the grated rind of half a lemon. Let's have a couple tablespoons of tomato paste. Mm-hmm. Salt and pepper, and like that. You can adjust the liquid as far as it goes when you're cooking this. Mm-hmm. We're going to heat the oil in the pan. We're going to have the onion and the garlic and cook it, right, until it smells good and it's fairly translucent on the onion. We're going to add the rice and the wine and cook it until it's all absorbed. And then we're going to start with the ladle of the stock. Remember, the stock is hot, right? And we're going to ladle it in ladle by ladle until it's absorbed. It's stir, 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 add more, stir, stir, stir. We've got quite a bit of stock. We're going to add and stir until about half the stock is left, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to stir in the seafood. And we're going to cook the whole thing for a few minutes until all the seafood is nice and cooked. Because then we're going to add in the rest of the stock, ladle by ladle, until it's all nice and creamy and it looks delicious. And it's also cooking the seafood some more, right? Right? And that's why shrimp would be added at the last minute so they don't get rubbery. And it's all yummy. It's all hot. The stock is all used up, or maybe not, depending on how creamy it looks, right? Because we want it to be nice and thick and creamy. Now we're going to stir in the lemon rind and the tomato puree, the tomato paste. And there we have it. Delicious. You serve it warm, yummy, and everybody likes it, but it is obviously a seafood dish, but you don't want to do it if you have people that are in some way don't eat or allergic to seafood. Because why should you make something that they can't eat? Now let's see. Can we get to the next recipe and then we'll start new recipes next time? Whoa, what an idea. Let's try to do it. We've got, pardon me. Hey, God. My. Really, that cough is lingering. We've got 5 minutes. Let's talk fast because we're getting tired of having chicken and vegetable stew on the list also because you guys are going, when are you going to change the recipes? When we do them. So chicken and vegetable stew, this is a safe recipe, but you still have to know that everybody is capable of eating it. And I thought you might have vegans. You might have somebody that can't eat one of these ingredients, right? Yeah. We've got 2 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken, breast, thighs, whatever it is you like to do, cut into 1-inch pieces, right? Secretly, and don't tell this to anyone that I said this because I'm always scared to say leftovers, but if you have leftover chicken that's really still good and isn't going to make anybody sick, you could dispense with the cooking part of the chicken for this and use already cooked chicken. Or you could buy a pre-made cooked chicken or those cooked chicken strips that they sell in the store, and it's really convenient. So I actually usually use the pre-cooked chicken. Oh, well. 2 teaspoons of olive oil. Let's have 2 nice regular size, like the 14 ounces, I think, cans of chicken broth. About 1 pound of green beans. You can use frozen, right? They're usually cut into pieces, which is nice, or else you can cut them into 2-inch pieces yourself. Just defrost them. Nothing wrong with it. 4 medium carrots that we're going to cut into 1/2-inch slices. About 3 stalks of celery, also the 1/2-inch slices because it looks nice. 2 cups of some sort of a fresh mushroom that we're going to slice. Sometimes they come sliced, which is nice. Do not use the jar. There is no way to reconstitute that. They're weird and they're rubbery. Even if you must use the jar, just put the jar aside. I was going to say you could drain it and pat them dry. No, you can't. Don't use jarred mushrooms. They're just weird, and they will make your whole thing look weird. We're going to have 1/2 cup of cold water and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch. Okay. So we're also going to use the water as we go. Well, we have the broth. Okay, so we're going to cook our chicken in hot oil, right, if we're not using already cooked chicken. I'm going to use cooked chicken. We're going to add the broth, the beans, the carrots, the celery, the mushrooms, the onions, the whole thing. We're going to bring it to a boil, reduce the heat, simmer it, 10 minutes, until the vegetables are tender. And if you're using chicken that you just used in the Dutch oven in the oil and cooking it around, until it's no longer pink, of course, right, right. Now we're going to take a small bowl separately. We're going to combine the little bit of water. In fact, do sparingly on the water to see how this goes. And the cornstarch, right? And we're going to whisk it until it's smooth. It's going to give a little thickening to make it stew and not soup. We're going to add it to the stew. You cook it until it thickens, which it will. It'll make it, and this is kind of a cross between stew and soup. It's just delicious. Cook till it's hot, it's thickened, stir it 2 minutes, more until everything looks delicious. The chicken's all nice and heated through. The vegetables, especially the carrots, are nice and edible. And like that, delicious. You serve with some rice on the side or some pasta maybe. I know George always goes for mashed potatoes. Hi. Yes, mashed potatoes is good too. That's it. It's easy. It's something that everybody likes. It's nice. It's winter in this part of the world. I don't know about other parts of the world. And it's a dish that everybody knows what it is. Fabulous. So there you have it. Oh, my goodness, we've managed to do both recipes, and now we are out of time. My friends, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.